Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a privilege for me to speak to you from this pulpit again. For the past several months, I've been a student minister at the Theodore Parker Church in West Roxbury, and so I've had to be there every Sunday, and I've really missed being here. It's good to see my friends again. Mike Bowes and I have built this worship service around the life and spirituality of Howard Thurman. He was a Baptist preacher who grew up in the generation before Martin Luther King Jr. Thurman has a lot to say to us as Unitarian Universalists and to all people who care about social justice. I hope to provoke your curiosity about this man and his life as an example of a strong connection that exists between spirituality and social action. Howard Thurman was born in 1899, and he grew up in Daytona, Florida. His mother worked most of the time. He was raised by his grandmother, Nancy, a former slave who shaped him intellectually and spiritually and prepared him to excel in life. To win his education, Howard Thurman overcame racial and economic barriers every step of the way. Public schools for black children in Daytona ended in the seventh grade, but the eighth grade was required for entry to high school. When Thurman completed the seventh grade, the principal of his school volunteered to tutor him privately so that he was able to pass his eighth grade exams. But there were few high schools for black children in the entire state of Florida. Thurman faced economic hardship to attend the Florida Baptist Academy in Jacksonville. He graduated as class valedictorian, and then he proceeded to Morehouse College in Atlanta, where he won nearly every literary prize, purportedly read every book in the library, and graduated again as class valedictorian. Thurman decided early on that he wanted to become a minister, and he applied to the Newton Theological Seminary in Newton, Massachusetts. He received a polite letter from the president, who expressed his regret that the school did not admit Negroes, and referred to him to school in Virginia where he could receive the necessary training to provide religious leadership to his people. This is not one of our proudest memories at Andover Newton. Thurman enrolled at the Rochester Theological Seminary in Rochester, New York, whose policy was to admit two black students per year at most. He was given a single room, but then two white classmates invited him to move in with them. The school administration opposed this, but there was nothing official that they could do to prevent it. Thurman served as a guest preacher, and he accepted many public speaking engagements to discuss black-white relations. He did this despite the harassment of the Ku Klux Klan, which was active in Western New York at that time. Thurman graduated from seminary in 1926. I'd like to tell you about his career, but that would take all morning, so I'll only give a brief outline. He first became pastor to a racially mixed congregation at the Mount Zion Baptist Church in Oberlin, Ohio. After 3 years, he left Oberlin to study with Rufus Jones, a Quaker philosopher and mystic. He then returned south to teach at the Morehouse and Spelman Colleges. In 1932, he came to Howard University in Washington, D.C. as professor of theology and dean of the chapel. In 1935, he led an African-American delegation on a pilgrimage of friendship to India, an experience that would change his life. In 1943, Thurman left his tenured position at Howard University to help lead an interracial, interfaith church in San Francisco, the Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples. In 1953, he came to Boston University as professor of theology and dean of the Marsh Chapel. This allowed him to extend the reach of his interfaith work, and it was an important social milestone as well, because Thurman was the first African American to be the dean at a predominantly white university. He remained at BU until 1965, when he launched what he called his wider ministry, Howard and his wife, Susan Bailey Thurman, traveled the world and taught widely. So far, I've sketched the contours of a vigorous man who surmounted many obstacles to serve his fellow human creatures. But what kind of person was he inside? Howard Thurman describes two early influences that formed him, his experience of the natural world and his grandmother Nancy. His earliest recollections concern nature. The young Howard looked forward to nightfall and found a comforting presence in the darkness. He writes, "The night was more than a companion. It was a presence, an articulate climate. I could hear the night think, and I could feel the night feel. I felt embraced, enveloped, held secure. All the little secrets of my life and heart, all of my most intimate and private thoughts would not be violated, I knew, if I spread them out before me in the night." So very early in his life, Howard Thurman felt direct experience of the divine presence. His favorite psalm was number 139, which echoes his trusting relationship to the darkness. I'll read just a few verses. "O Lord, you have searched me and you have known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I say, 'Surely the darkness shall cover me and the light around me become night,' even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day. For darkness is as light to you. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, that I know very well. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my thoughts. See if there is any wicked in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." Young Howard had a special friendship with a large oak tree in his backyard. He says that he drew strength from this tree. He admired the way it survived the Florida storms, bending but never breaking. Howard also drew strength from his grandmother Nancy, who was like an oak tree to him. He recalled resting his head in her lap during the long hours of Sunday worship while he was still too young to understand the words. Later, she told him about her life as a slave. She often repeated this story. "Once or twice a year, the master would allow a slave preacher to come from the neighboring plantation and preach to the slaves. At the end of the worship service, the preacher would pause, his eyes scrutinizing every face in the congregation, and he would tell them, 'You are not slaves. You are God's children.'" This may sound like a denial of fact, but it tells the truth in a powerful way. There's a difference between the condition of slavery and the identity of being a slave. The preacher wanted his listeners to remember that their value was not fixed by the role imposed upon them, but by their kinship to the transcendent. Howard Thurman has been called a mystic. His spirituality was based on a sense of intimacy with his God and an interconnectedness between all things. During his early years as a pastor, Thurman began to cultivate a lifelong practice of reflection and meditation. He came to recognize the unity between his own needs and the needs of his parishioners and human need in general. During these years, Thurman says, barriers were crumbling within himself and his ministry, although it would take time to work out the implications of this experience in his life. The watershed event was his journey to India, Sri Lanka, and Burma in 1935, with a delegation of African Americans on behalf of the World Student Christian Federation. In his meetings with the Indian intellectuals, Thurman was forced to look critically at his own Christian faith. At one speaking engagement, he he received this blunt question. What are you doing here? Your forebears were taken from the west coast of Africa as slaves by Christians. They were sold in America, a Christian country, to Christians. They were freed by a man who was not himself a professing Christian. Since that time, you've been brutalized, lynched, burned, and denied most civil rights by Christians. I think that an intelligent young man such as yourself here in our country on behalf of a Christian enterprise is a traitor to all the darker peoples of the earth. Thurman agreed with the questioner's stark assessment of the Christian establishment, but he made a careful distinction between Christianity and the religion of Jesus, who stands on the side of justice for all people. During his travels, Thurman also struggled to articulate the relevance of Christianity in a country that was struggling against Western imperialism. At the same time, he came to see the kinship between his Christianity and the other world religions he encountered. Thurman says, I had to find my way to the place where I could stand side by side with a Hindu, a Buddhist, a Muslim, and know that the authenticity of their experience was identical with the essence and the authenticity of my own. The high point of Thurman's India trip was his meeting with Gandhi, who very much wanted to meet with him. Gandhi asked many questions about slavery, how the people had survived this experience, the struggle against discrimination, and the experience of the black churches. Gandhi expressed his hope that African Americans would deliver an unadulterated message of nonviolence, not only to America, but to people everywhere. Thurman asked Gandhi why his campaign of nonviolence had not yet freed India from the rule of the British. Gandhi answered that the effectiveness of nonviolence depended on its wholesale acceptance by the masses of people and not just the leaders. So far, the ideal had not taken root because the people lacked vitality. Vitality includes physical well-being. The people were hungry and they couldn't support themselves after the British took away their traditional livelihoods. That's why Gandhi promoted the weaving of cotton cloth by his own example. Vitality also includes self-respect. The people's loss of self-respect was due not only to the British presence, but to divisions within Indian society, specifically the caste structure, which treated some human beings as worthless. Gandhi had to attack the problem of untouchability. As a caste Hindu, he provided a personal example by adopting an outcast into his own family. In his speaking and writing, Gandhi called the untouchables Harijan, that is to say, children of God. Thurman's experience in India would bear fruit in the years that followed. He distilled his teachings on social ethics in his book, Jesus and the Disinherited. This book had a strong influence on the civil rights leaders of the 1960s, including Martin Luther King Jr., who reportedly kept a copy when he traveled in his briefcase. In Jesus and the Disinherited, Thurman acknowledges the role of Christianity in supporting the abuse of power and the reinforcement of segregation, but he distinguishes the Christian establishment from the life and teachings of Jesus. He asks us to consider Jesus as a religious subject instead of a religious object. In fact, Jesus was a Jew living in a land occupied by a foreign power. His people had their backs against the wall. They were threatened in their bodily survival and in their survival as a people. They recognized two options, to knuckle under or to respond with violent revolution. Jesus preached a third way. It was an emancipatory way of being. He taught his disciples not to fear those who killed the body but could not kill the soul. To the people, he preached, the kingdom of heaven is in you. Your destiny is not limited by the oppressor. You are children of God. There's nothing easy about this path of Jesus. It requires mastery of the three hounds of hell that dog the disinherited: fear, deception, and hatred. Gandhi also recognized this connection between freedom and self-mastery. The Hindi word for freedom is Swaraj, or self-rule. The people must be strong to master themselves and reclaim the freedom that naturally belongs to them. Jesus provided his strength in his teachings about the kingdom, his healing presence, and his self-sacrifice. Likewise, Gandhi offered his vision, his personal example, and his life. Howard Thurman returned from India and continued to teach at Howard University. In 1943, he received a letter from Dr. Alfred Fisk, a Presbyterian minister in San Francisco. The letter asked Thurman if he knew anyone who could help establish an interracial church. The leadership of this church would be shared equally between a black and a white minister, and the governing board, the staff, and the Sunday school would all be integrated. When Thurman read this letter, he says, he felt a touch on his shoulder. It meant giving up a tenured professorship and uprooting his family and moving across the country. He had to take leave without salary. As it turned out, he didn't return from this unpaid sabbatical. San Francisco in the 1940s was a city in need of healing. Thurman refers to the bleeding wound caused by the deportation of Japanese Americans. The war industry brought an influx of workers from the South, white and black, and a residue of prejudice and resentment that they carried with them. San Francisco was a place simmering with ethnic tensions, misunderstanding, and xenophobia. The Church of the Fellowship of All Peoples held its inaugural service at the First Unitarian Church in San Francisco. They held their early services in the chapel of a former Japanese congregation. The church members represented most of the Christian denominations, and people from other faiths often came to worship there and to participate in the leading of worship. The format of this worship was opened up to include meditation, fine arts, drama, liturgical dance, and other non-traditional elements. 1 year's schedule included a world communion service, music and liturgy of the synagogue, living Madonnas, 2 dance services with the Fellowship Dance Choir, and a color motion picture service. These programs attracted visitors, but the church leaders sought other ways to reach out to a divided city. One vehicle was a series of intercultural workshops to showcase the works of local authors and artists, to host international dinners with foods from around the world, and cultural presentations by members of different ethnic groups in the community. In Sunday school, the children learned about the lives of children in other countries and in different religions. Thurman recalls one small boy who told his mother when he went home, "I knew Jesus was a Baptist, but I had no idea that he was a Jew." These achievements may seem pretty tame by today's standards, but this was 60 years ago, before the advances of the civil rights movement, which we sometimes take for granted now. Thurman was able to put into practice his understanding of love, which he first experienced as a child in the dark. It's the experience of being known and loved that allows people to turn around and to love others. But this love requires understanding. Thurman says, "I began with the concept that goodwill, which did not have as its center a hard core of fact and understanding, was futile and mere sentimentality. How to thicken the relations and give content to their character was the main issue." The work of social justice has 2 aspects. There's the work of action, and there's the inward struggle where matters of life and death are first decided. Thurman's life shows how these 2 are connected. As a mystic, his personal experience forced him to live out his vision in the world. As boundaries dissolved within himself, Thurman found ways to heal alienation between people and to build bridges of understanding between different religions, ethnic groups, and social classes. Thurman regarded patience as essential, even and especially in matters concerning social change. Patience is not inactivity or resignation, but a dynamic process, Thurman writes. Some things cannot be forced, but they must unfold, sending their tendrils deep into the heart of life, gathering strength and power with the unfolding days. Patience, in the last analysis, is only partially concerned with time, with waiting. It includes also the quality of relentlessness, ceaselessness, and constancy. It is a mood of deliberate calm that is the distilled result of confidence. Howard Thurman died in 1981. In his eulogy, the Reverend Jesse Jackson described him as a teacher of teachers, a leader of leaders, and a preacher of preachers. During his lifetime, Howard Thurman patiently pulled down walls at the interpersonal and community level. He led the way for more sweeping social changes. Without mincing words, and also without bitterness, he holds open the door to the disinherited and privileged alike. He encourages us to cross social boundaries and to recognize one another as children of God.